Welcome back to Kinda Funny's MCU in Review. That's right, we are ranking, reviewing, and recapping every single Marvel Studios project. It's always fun that in the last couple times, at least, the finale of a Marvel show ties into the release of one of the movies. So we're always doing two of these like back-to-back. We just did Love and Thunder last week. Where did it rank? If you didn't watch it, you have to go back and find
out.
Watch this one yet. You'll never know, everybody. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes. I'm joined by the big daddy himself, Greg Miller.
Hello, Tim.
Hello, Greg. We also have the Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez.
Hello, Tim.
The big dog, Kevin Coelho.
Hello, Tim.
And the producer slash seducer, Nick Scarpino.
Hello, Tim. Me.
Ah, oh, God damn it. God damn it. You see those screen castings, though?
Wait, what?
The girl from Ready or Not? It's going to be in Scream, which is
Once they said that Hayden Panettiere is coming back, no other news matters.
It doesn't matter. Make the movie. Yeah. Just make the movie.
Make it with her.
The Flash is going to be in it from Grant Homecoming. Gustin? No, the not the Flash. Flash.
Thompson.
Oh, Flash. Yeah, Hank Gustin's still.
Oh. Different.
Ezra Miller's fucking role.
I know a lot of people in Hollywood watch this show. They want to know what if we have our finger on the pulse and they, you know, they make a decision. Get Grant Gustin in some more things. All right.
Gustin up.
This CW show, it's over. It's ending. He's almost done. He's almost out. Get him in some stuff. Book him on some things.
He's got too tight of a little body to not be, you know?
I don't know. Why do you have to
say He's a tall man. He's got height, Andy.
Why'd you have to take Emmy? I
was about to hit the clip button. Now I'm not, you know, because that's a weird clip to send to him.
Tall and very tight.
He's been on this show before.
I've been on the Flash.
This show, of course, is Kinda Funny's in Review, where each and every week we get together to talk about, no, that's not right. We rank, review, and recap different movie franchises. Of course, are doing a lot of Marvel stuff right now. Next week, we got Rocky in Review starting. That is extremely exciting. I have never seen the Rocky movies. We're doing this building into the release of Creed 3, which they claim is November this year, but I have my doubts, everybody. So we're going to start this now to be prepared just in case. But if that ends up getting moved, we'll pivot, we'll figure it out. But Rocky is happening, and I'm very, very excited about that. Are you excited about that, Nick?
I can't. I'm excited for you to see the Rocky series because it is a roller coaster.
Roller coaster.
For all the greatest reasons possible. You're going to love it, Tim.
I lost such track of time when Tim said that Creed 3 is coming out in November. I lost track of time where we are now, and then I thought, there must be enough movies to last us until then. That'd be a lot of movies, you know?
Well, just so you know, Andy, because there's two Creed, six Rocky. Creed 3 is coming out, but the bigger thing is Rockies. We're going to make a lot of detours.
Six Rocky movies. Yeah. Let me tell you, Andy. I'm gonna give you a little prediction for the future. It's gonna start real high. It's gonna get real low when we start getting toward five.
No,
five is not great.
Phenomenal. Four is phenomenal though, right?
And then six is where it starts to peak back up. So I think you're gonna be really. We're gonna only have to suffer through a couple movies that are a little bit dated, but everything else should be incredible for you. You're going to love it.
I can't wait. It's going to be fun. Greg Miller, you've had your hand raised.
Yeah, sorry. As someone who will be joining the Trogs for Rocky and Review and not being going along for this amazing ride that you're all about to have, on behalf of everyone in the Trog community and the In Review YouTube community and the In Review podcast community, we would like to officially ask that Rocky Horror Picture Show be added to this.
Okay.
What about Rocky and Bullwinkle?
Hey, depending on how far they delay Creed 3, we might have a whole bunch of space to fill, but we'll have to wait and see. But anyway, we're going to take a lot of detours to get back to the Marvel movies coming out because there's a whole bunch of those. We got some other things popping up. So stay tuned in Review. It's about to be a wild ride this summer. But anyways, this is In Review. You can get it on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. You can also get it as a podcast by searching your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny In Review. And we'll be right there for you. If you wanted to get the show live as we record it and ad-free, you got to go to patreon.com /kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producers, Molecule, Fargo Brady, Gordon McGuire, and Al Tribesman have done. Today, we're brought to you by ExpressVPN, Athletic Greens, and MeUndies, but I'll tell you about that later. Let's talk about Ms. Marvel. Released between June 8th and July 13th, 2022, it is part of Phase 4 of the MCU. It is the 36th Marvel Studios project. It had 6 episodes, averaging about 50 minutes, making it one of the longer running of the show so far on Disney+. Music was done by Laura Cartman, who is also doing the music for The Marvels. And a fun little fact here, Nia DaCosta, who is the director of The Marvels, also directed the post-credit scene for this movie, for this show.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It does. It does. I want to get all of your opinions about Ms. Marvel, because we've done the screencast the week to week. Some variation of this group was on all of the episodes except for the finale. So I haven't really heard everyone's thoughts on it yet. I want to start with Greg Miller.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
So you just want to talk about the finale?
No, overall. Overall, but like emphasis on the finale.
Okay. I had a great time with Ms. Marvel. I really enjoyed it. I think they really crushed all the personal relationships. I think, you know, Iman is, I believe that's how we say her name, is a fantastic Kamala Khan. I think her family's fantastic. I think all that interplay, Bruno's great, her friends are great. Like, I love it in the same way I love Spider-Man's friends in Homecoming and that, you know, MCU Spider-Man universe. I do think the show suffers from being a Disney Plus show for a superhero that has powers that are visually exciting. That's not a knock against a Hawkeye or whatever, but a bow and arrow, I think, is easier to film than all this stuff with, you know, hard light constructs and whatnot. And I feel like for the finale here, it again really shone a light on that being the struggle for it, where I just did not think the fights looked cool. I did not think her powers looked cool. I did not think, and I shouldn't say look cool, they didn't look cool in action with what they were doing. I thought the Kamran stuff, I thought his were especially not great looking. And it is that thing where I've enjoyed this entire show. I wish we had stuck with what the DNA of episodes 1 and 2 really were, with all the visual pops and things and texts. And like, we lost that the more and more it went on as we kind of eased into the MCU. And I think leaving that in there would have been nicer to really differentiate for what it was. But that, because when you get closer to the end here, it's this weird, not hodgepodge, but you do have two clashing styles of the MCU we know so well and what the real world of it is, mashed up with how her powers look and how people act and the way the Jersey City is, which in the beginning I thought was pretty cool in terms of the colors and the vibrancy and what it is. But at the end here, I really do feel like I'm watching a Disney Channel show. And that's not, I'm not against that. I feel like it isn't where they started or where they seemed like they were going. And so like when the episode ended and we were done and Jen and I talked about it, it was this conversation of just like, listen, like the show accomplished the main goals, which are people know Ms. Marvel. I had a great time. I think her costume's cool. I think her family's cool. I care about her in the MCU because I know her backstory and who all the interplay between the people are. And I really, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I am super excited to see her in Marvels. I'm really excited to see what a real budget for these powers look like. But it's not lost on me watching it that, you know, a bunch of times in this episode, we're watching her powers through reflections or through other things because they know they don't look that great. You know what I mean? And her and Kamran inside of the dome that she cut off, it's like, this isn't even that interesting of a fight to get down to the usual MCU. I'm going to fight the exact reverse version of my powers or whatever. It's like, and then running through the school and again, like, we're gonna meet the school and they drop the plan and it's like, but they're right outside.
Yeah.
And I understand. And it's like,
took like an hour and a half to drop.
We're using baseballs and we're doing all this cool stuff. And it's like, these guys would shoot you dead. And I understand suspension of disbelief and we do it all the time whenever we want to, blah, blah. But it's just like, this was a mashup, I feel like, of the whimsical world of Ms. Marvel with then the real MCU. And that is jarring. And that didn't work for me in a way that when it turned off and I was like, I can't wait for Marvels and I loved her and I love it. And I'm like, Disney Plus still hasn't nailed these in terms of like landing it. They just can't, I don't feel like they're landing it or like, you know, we can get into, we will when we go through episode by episodes or whatever, of like the overall villains and this, that, and the other. And it's just like, it wasn't as good as it could have been.
Andy Cortez.
I really enjoyed the show. I feel like the weakest episode is probably episode 5. And while I agree with some of what Greg's saying with the final episode and how the show lost its style as it kept on going with losing all the little animations and those cool sort of Scott Pilgrim-y, Edgar Wright type, you know, we're playing with the world and we have this sort of visual aesthetic that we're trying to identify with. It almost feels like Marvel has a director and a writer that comes in for the final episode like of all of these shows. Like a lot of these episodes are you know, the show has its identity, and then the final episode always kind of feels like a far cry from the what the rest of the series has been. But that being said, I still feel like this show landed the plane at the end of the day. Like, I did not think I was going to feel that. Maybe I had my expectations lower than normal because I did not love the way episode 5 ended. I think episode 5 started off super strong and just kind of tailed off. And it felt like the finale anyway. So this whole episode, I'm wondering, what can they do that feels worth it? And honestly, I got a lot of the same feelings that I got playing the Miles Morales video game on PlayStation. With having, like, all you got to do is have a crowd get behind their city, like, hero, and I smile. It gives me chills, and it, you know, gets me emotional to see all these people super proud of her. And I'll disagree with Greg. I did like the VFX of the crystallized stuff. I never really ever felt like it was distracting or not good in any way. And yeah, at the end of the day, I feel like they did nail it, and I was very happy with the finale. And then we got that little X-Men stinger, and and then we got the post-credit scene, and like I was already happy with the episode, and then those things happened, so I was like doubly as giddy as I would have been. But yeah, I feel like this was one of the few episodes or one of the few finales of a lot of these Marvel shows that actually left me really happy by the end of it, where I did feel like going into this episode, I was not looking forward to where we were taking the series. But it's exciting, and I think they kind of nailed it as much as they could.
Nick?
I'm pretty middle of the road on it, honestly. I think overall it was fine. That's the best word I can use to describe it. I think the heart of this show is the family dynamic, and any time that we're not in that dynamic or exploring that, I just wasn't very interested. I don't think the antagonists were strong enough to really earn sort of the ending that we wound up with. I think Cameron's sort of like turned there where it just kind of seemingly came out of nowhere, and the final fight was what I was worried about, which was just going to be yellow-colored power versus purple-colored power. That's the same power. And it ended up just being that, unfortunately. I like what they were going for with the Home Alone school moment, but it just seemed like the longer that scene went on, to Greg's point, it was like, I feel like this federal agency would move a little bit faster than this than to let these kids have like 5 hours to set up all the stuff in this high school. And I think that could have been a really, really fun moment. But unfortunately, I just don't feel like any of the action-y stuff in this, It didn't feel like it was a good payoff to the setup, because I feel like the setup for a lot of the superpowered stuff just kind of fell flat for me. I think the show is really, really fun when it's just Kamala and Bruno and all the kids just kind of exploring what it means to have these powers and whether or not they should share that with each other, or even if they know what that means. And anything beyond that, I kind of just feel like I got a little bit muddled and was just dipping too far into the generic category. As far as the post-credit sequence and all that stuff, it just made me think, man, I wish they had more budget for this and didn't have to fill as much time, because I feel like they could have told the same poignant story but not spread it out over so many episodes, that I think it could have been a little bit more impactful for me.
Yeah, if I can jump in, like one of the things I saw, and I forget who it was on our Twitter feed today, it's a mutual though in the industry, saying that like the real antagonists, the real bad guys of the show were the cops, were damage control and stuff like that, right? And I feel like that could have been so much stronger if they wouldn't have done anything with Kamran here at the end, right? Or even even a lesser extent, maybe his mom and stuff like that. If we would have solved that a different way and we would have had all this here, it would have played better to me that, hey, that's what we're doing. That's the thing we're doing. And it would have honestly probably worked, right? Because I care so much about everybody at the mosque and everybody in the family and how cool these people are. And even the, you know, the conversation in this episode with the secret ingredients, nutmegs. They don't want cookies. Maybe they'll like these cookies. Like, I like that. I like those people and I like those characters. And I was pissed off when Damage Control didn't take their fucking shoes off, right? Like, I would have rather seen that storyline than, hey, these people are from another dimension and they're going to ruin everything.
And I think that's the tough spot that Disney's in with some of these, right? Because, Greg, you're right. The show's a lot more lighthearted, and I think it's by design, than I think it could have been. And I think when you're dealing with subject matter that's that intense and that important, you have to tread lightly with it, and they treaded very, very lightly with it. And I think they could have pushed it a little bit farther. And I think doing that, I think the problem they have is that I don't know if they want to make these Damage Control people, specifically like the head of the Damage Control, who was like, you got to pull back. I feel like that guy is going to be a character that they don't want to push fully into, like, being an enemy bad guy character.
Yes, do we?
So, yeah, so
for
we don't.
A specific reason, y'all. That motherfucker's a Skrull. I'm calling it right now.
Ah, okay.
No doubt in my mind.
But I mean, the issue with that is, you know, when you have an FBI organization going in and exuding their power that way and kind of abusing their power that way, you kind of want to hate them. But they didn't really push them far enough to be hated. And then the reaction on the other side from Kamala and from Naki and all them was so warm that it's like, I'm almost like, I'm not like, I want them to be a little bit more challenged when it comes to these a-hole FBI agents that are coming in. And it just seems like it kind of rolled off their back, which, by the way, is the absolute right thing to do. And that was to the point of the leader of the mosque. He was like, you know, don't let your enemies, just because your enemies hate you doesn't give you a reason, doesn't mean you have to hate them, which is an incredibly, incredibly insightful and amazing theme to explore. And they did, but I kind of wish, like, as an audience member, I need to be like, I hate these Damage Control people. Like, these people are abusive and they're a-holes and they're not. And we just never quite got to that place with them.
And that's part of, and that's why I'm right there with you on that, Nick. Again, because I'm always, you know, he's always Stewie from Secession to me. But like Stewie, you know, jumping over from the movies and being here, I was like, what a great connective tissue. But then it almost gets used like Amanda Waller in Peacemaker, where, oh, he's not actually on this show. Like, they here's his henchwoman who will be the one who does everything. And once in a while, we'll get a phone call back. It's like, then you're already making this out to be a non-player in the universe, right? Yeah. Like, I wish this was a person that had already been established or we're going to see more of. But guess what? No, she was here to be this bad guy, but not even as bad as I wish she would have been to really be a fucking bad guy and be the bad guy of the show.
And I did lose some of the messaging when they are trying to tread on these really tough topics and they say, this is what happens when one of those people gets powers. And what do you mean one of those people?
Yeah.
A kid. And it's like, we get the reference. We understand what they're saying, but what are they trying to say with it? And that I didn't fully understand. I don't feel like they dove deep enough in either of the pools. It was just like, we're throwing this out there because we're aware that this is a topic and this is an issue, but we don't really want to dip our toe in either side. We're just going to kind of sit up here and let you know that, yes, you know, this could look like profiling and we're talking about a young Arab kid, teenager or whatever.
Yeah.
I just felt like it was kind of like they're saying something without really going all the way forward. And like, I just wasn't sure what they were doing with that.
See, Daddy, I disagree with that because I think that with how they handled it, they did a good job of making it seem like she was like, no, it's the kid thing. But it's like, then they showed that it's not just the kid thing when they go into the mosque and they start talking about, that you're explaining like over half the people here. Like, I think they did a good job of showing us, like the character might have said, oh, I don't know about this. But like the creators of the show told us they very clearly know what they're doing with it. And the way that the rest of the characters in the world sees that person is she's clearly bad. Like, she is clearly making the wrong choices with this. I thought they did a good job with it.
I think they needed to push it a little bit more in order for, like, I don't know. It was like it wasn't fully committing, in my opinion. But that's
I think about this if it had been an HBO Max show and how intense that scene would have been, where this government organization goes into a mosque and they have that showdown, right? This was done a lot more like let's just kind of broach the topic, but let's move on because I think that's by design. Right? I don't think the show's supposed to be like The Boys. I don't think it's supposed to be like, you know, The Wire, where we're really, really getting into these social issues. I think it's just like, hey, this is something that we're broaching, but we don't want it to be fully about that. And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. Like, that was one of the things we talked about as we were simultaneously reviewing Ms. Marvel and The Boys, which is kind of nice sometimes that everything doesn't have to be as hyper violent and hyper real and hyper like satirical as The Boys. And it is, like I said, one of the strengths of the series, I think, really is that we did get to see the culture from, let's be honest, a perspective that is not ever really done in our mainstream media, right? Up until this point, whenever a mosque has been brought up in a movie or a TV show, large part, they're painted as the bad guy. And so it is really nice to see the opposite of that and to really dig into that culture, which I thought was really cool. But I just, like, everything beyond that, when we get to the final fight, I was just like, this. I'm less interested in this.
Kevin, what'd you think of Ms. Marvel overall?
I really liked the show. I thought it was a lot of fun. I was kind of just blown away by how enjoyable every episode was. I do think that, yeah, the episode where they go back in time is a little bit like, it's kind of slow, and like they're giving us a lot of exposition and stuff, but they're not really giving us a lot of answers, so that's always a bummer. And then the season finale, that gets to a certain point where it's like, all right, I see where this is going. This is going to be her fighting him, and they both have the same powers. And that's, like, I saw some people in the chat being like, but they didn't fight. It's like, they did, though. They did. They just didn't, like one of them didn't die, which I guess is progress, because I feel like typically that's what happens, right? But they do fight, and it's just kind of a bummer. Like, we were watching, and I was like, oh, man. It's just them fighting the different version of themselves, like a palette swap. And it's such a bummer that, like, that's always what it has to be. The conclusion was fine. I think that as far as Disney Plus shows go, the Marvel ones at least, I think that, like, I like this, the solution that we got to at the end of it. Like, this is kind of reminds me of Hawkeye, and like, okay, like, they've solved things in a cool way, and like, I'm down where the story's at. I'm pretty happy with it. I do feel like I wish it hadn't lost so much of that fun detail that we had in the first, like, episode, maybe the first and second episode, where we had so many of those little pops and like so many things that made it feel unique. We kind of lost that through like the middle episodes, and then we get a lot of it at the end of the episode to kind of remind you of like, oh, remember, we've got a style. And I just kind of wish they had done that throughout. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it a lot. I'm very excited for more.
Yeah, I'm pretty aligned with you there, where I think I would even go as far as saying that overall I love this show more than I like the show, despite having so many issues that I think are core issues that would have been so easily handled and remedied. And I think a lot of that has to do with not even just the use of its runtime, but how it paced the runtime and the amount of flashbacks and the amount of story that they dedicated to the whole Pakistan storyline. And dealing with the clandestine in general, like, that feels like a subplot of a show that is a much longer season than six episodes, or that's a season two storyline where we get some flashbacks to kind of fill in some gaps. Because what we got from the first couple episodes and the last episode of the Jersey stuff, all the family stuff, I think not only did they set it up great in episodes one and two, I thought they brought it home fantastically at the end of tying every element of Ms. Marvel to the family itself. Like having the mom give the outfit, having the dad kind of
tear it up
the
name.
Like,
I loved
all of that. I thought was awesome. I thought it was great, you know, and I think that the big reveals, we finally got the thing that we've been talking about with these Marvel shows of like, oh man, like Doctor Strange is going to show up in WandaVision, and he doesn't. Captain Marvel showed up in this in a way that is interesting, that adds up to the post credits we've seen for like Shang-Chi and stuff, where it's like, oh shit, they're building something here. There are cool plot threads that are connecting, and I like that a lot. The mutant reveal was all that I could want from a Marvel show, which is playing with my expectations and knowledge as an MCU super fan and a Marvel Comics fan, where it's everything that I know, but they're doing it slightly different, and I think even better. I love when MCU kind of has the new definitive version of the right way to handle these characters and storylines. And Ms. Marvel being a mutant, I think, is way more interesting than her being an inhuman. So love that stuff. Of course, I love the X-Men theme sting. All that stuff was great. But yeah, it's the whole Home Alone school scene, I think, could have been a lot cooler if they built up to it more and had the two episodes of episodes three and four or four and five, whatever, four and five, not do all that stuff. Well, I think those were great episodes. I just don't think they were great episodes in this show and in the story that they told, because Damage Control had a lot of great ideas, and I think they handled a lot of elements of it great. but there wasn't enough, and they never quite took it where they needed to in terms of it being believable. And to Greg's point about the and Nick's point too, of like, they're in the school, the cops are outside, like, how are they coming up with all this plan? Even the way they kind of shot a lot of it, where she's kind of drawn on the whiteboard, it's showing the real life version of what they're doing, and Bruno's like dancing with a skeleton in the back. Like, there were certain points that I feel like they were having too much fun for their own good, given the stakes that were at hand, and it kind of made everything kind of feel less important, especially when the main thing they were doing was protecting a character that I don't care about with Kamran.
Yeah.
And the clandestine storyline, I think, ran its course, and it might be one of my least favorite MCU storylines ever, like up there with the Flag Smasher stuff from Falcon and Winter Soldier.
It's just so poorly done.
Damn.
It's a great idea.
It just, yeah, there's great stuff here. Yeah. But you went from 0 to 60 to 0 so quickly on it. It's a bummer. But I think that they created a great universe with great characters, and there's so much good here. And when it's good, it's really damn good. It's just unfortunate that a lot of the bad stuff is still here. Some of it even like ratcheted up a bit. And I'm excited for a season 2. I think we will get a season 2 after the Marvels, and that's interesting to me as well. Great cast of characters, great story, great music. Like, everything about this was a very high quality MCU show that I wish all of them were hitting this level, but I wish the level they were hitting was even higher than this. So I'm hopeful for more. This is definitely one of my higher ranked of the TV shows, but it's not my top rank. So we'll talk more about that later. But for now, let me tell you about our sponsors. Shout out to ExpressVPN for sponsoring this episode. When you use the bathroom, you always close the door behind you, right? Well, you don't want random passerbyers looking in on you, so why would you let people look in on you when you go online? Your internet service provider knows every single website you visit. ExpressVPN puts a stop to this. It creates a secure encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet so that your online activity can't be seen by anyone. I use ExpressVPN on all my devices, whether it's my phone, my desktop, everything. Anytime I'm using the internet, just because I am trying to stay as safe as possible. The best part is using ExpressVPN is as easy as closing the bathroom door. You just fire up the app, you click one button, and you're protected. It is so easy. It's the biggest button in the world. One click, you're done. So if you're like me and believe your online activity is your business, secure yourself today by visiting expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. You can use our link, expressvpn.com/kindoffunny, and you can get an extra 3 months free. That's expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. Are people still trying to make plans with you this summer? As if you aren't booked and busy already. But thankfully, MeUndies wants to help make this summer the most comfortable one you will never forget. Because when you're living your best life, the last thing you want to worry about is butt sweat. And I know that from experience. But you know what? MeUndies has always been there to help me. I'm always wearing my MeUndies shirts, my lounge pants, my lounge shorts, my undies themselves, the socks. I'm a MeUndies fanboy. Wouldn't have it any other way. I just absolutely love the soft micromodal fabric. Find your ultimate summer comfort in sizes extra small all the way up to 4XL. MeUndies has a great offer for all of you out there. For any first-time purchasers, you can get 15% off. For a limited time, if you sign up for the free to join MeUndies membership, you get 25% off your first membership item. To get 50% off your order, 25% off your first membership item, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. Shout out to Athletic Greens for sponsoring this episode. I started taking AG1 because I'm not a big pill guy. I don't want to spend a lot of time on extra things, but I wanted to make sure that I was taking care of my health. Now, I've been using it the last couple months and I love it. It doesn't taste like it's super healthy. It has a fun tropical taste that I actually look forward to in the morning. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny. Now that we're back.
Yeah. Andy, it's interesting, by the way. I'm sorry. We're going to the plot.
I was going
before,
to, but go
before
for
we do, before we do that, I also want to say
I don't have a plot song anyway, so plot.
Okay.
Give us your thoughts, Nick.
No, I was going to say one more thing on the Home Alone thing, but we can talk about that when we get there, because we'll get there in a few minutes.
I just do want to say, like, okay. One of the things that I forgot to mention Tim, you did bring up, but, like, I do think that, like, the biggest deal about this is that, like, it ends and, like, big things, like, are introduced and, like, big characters are seen and, like, it's a good sign for Disney Plus shows, right? Like, hopefully they understand this is what people want, right? Because, like, them introducing the idea of mutants, wild. Them having Brie Larson on there, huge deal. Like, I'm super excited to see where this goes and how cool it ties into Ms. Marvel. What was that?
Cool outfit for her, too.
Oh, yeah.
Love it.
Really cool outfit. Like it. And the way it was introduced, like, you're and so right. It hits hard.
Kev, on top of that, too, it's like this is, we see it say, Ms. Marvel will return in the Marvels. Like, yep. Teeing up, hey, this TV character is going to be in the movie. Like, I love that type of synergy. But we'll talk way more in depth because now it's plot time. Greg Miller hit us. Plot
time. No, Andy hit us.
A plot.
Why you gotta shrug?
Just this is what we're talking about. Like,
Marvel doesn't support these shows the way they should. Andy Cortez doesn't support them. Ladies and gentlemen, I move for a vote of no confidence in the Chancellor Andy Cortez.
I liked it more than you did.
Wow. You didn't like it. Welcome to Ms. Marvel. Welcome to Ms. Marvel, everybody. We're talking about Ms. Marvel. We remember that for these ones, we go episode by episode. We get a little synopsis. We talk about it. I'm reading off Wikipedia. Hello. First episode, of course, titled Generation Y. Kamala Khan is a 16-year-old high schooler and fangirl of the Avengers, particularly Carol Danvers / Captain Marvel. After failing another driving test and meeting with her school counselor, Kamala and her best friend Bruno finish her Captain Marvel cosplay for AvengerCon while voting her strict parents. Kamala receives a package of items from her grandmother, including a golden bangle, but her mom sees it as junk. After failing to convince her parents to let her go to AvengerCon, Kamala sneaks out with Bruno to attend anyway, taking the bangle as part of her cosplay. After getting there and dressing up, she puts it on, but it causes her to project constructs of cosmic energy that inadvertently cause havoc. Amidst the chaos, Kamala uses her powers to save her classmate Zoe. Bruno rushes Kamala home, where a distraught mother pleads with her to focus on her own story. In a mid-credit scene, Damage Control sits there and watches a video and then goes out to detain her.
These episodes are so fun. Like, just kind of thinking back on it, I'm really kind of, I guess, thinking back on these older episodes and how far they kind of flew from the coop. Is that a saying? Mm-mm. Flew the coop.
Well, I mean, that is a saying.
Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Yes,
that's it.
Awesome. That is great show. Great show.
Okay. Anyway, I just think about how fun and energetic a lot of these earlier episodes were with all of the visual flair, and then we just kind of lost it.
That was my thing too. Is like to go off that point, right? I thought that was going to come back eventually, right? We have that one great scene that we're going to get to. I think it's in second or third episode where they end up going to Avengers Con, and she draws the plan out, and you're like, "That's incredible!" And then it immediately fails. And I thought, "Oh, that's going to be cool. That's going to be sort of like a subplot line of her, you know, dealing with these powers, dealing with her family, dealing all these things. And then finally, we're going to have a moment where she draws all the stuff out and it works. And we did have that, but it just didn't feel.
It wasn't as cool.
It wasn't as cool as I wanted it to be, right? Like, you wanted. Because
they should have done it a couple more times throughout
the series. They needed to do it a couple more times and have Bruno be like, this is not working. Like, what you're doing is not working. And have her grapple with that conflict. And then finally, by the end, her be like, literally, they needed that moment where their backs were up against the wall and they're cornered in this high school, and everyone's like, "What are we gonna do?" And she and Bruno's like, "I know what
don't
we have
to
do." Don't do it. She's like, "I know what we have to do," and everyone's like, "Right." She's like, "Trust me." And then it finally, the plan works. But I hate to say this, but this stuff kind of dipped into, because we didn't have that payoff, it kind of dipped into gimmicky territory for me. Looking back at it now, being like, okay, this kind of does feel like someone was like, "Oh, that's not enough to the show. Let's put some more icing on the cake a little bit." And it's unfortunate.
Yeah, like they weren't fully committal with it, and that kind of bums me out, because I think that that a lot of those gimmicks work in the earlier episodes because of how whimsical and how positive and fun everything was.
Right.
But I still think you can have those visual flares in moments where things are more dramatic and maybe a little bit more tense. Like, I think you can still have those in the same way that when her grandmother's talking to her, and you see sort of the text messages pop up in the sky. Like, that isn't you know, punk rock, super fun music with visual stuff happening. It's like, that's still kind of a pretty emotional moment right there. And I think you can still have those visual flares in moments that, you know, are a little bit more tense and scary for the characters, but they just kind of fully abandon them until we see that final episode with the chalkboard stuff. So kind of lame.
Our next episode is episode 2. It's called Crushed. Kamala begins training to control her powers with Bruno, who deduces that the bangle activated her own superpowers. Kamala, Bruno, and her friend Nakia attend a party organized by Zimmer, where they meet a new senior, Kamran. Kamala befriends Kamran, but Bruno becomes frustrated when she chooses to spend time with Kamran instead of training. After seeing a vision of a mysterious woman, Kamala asks her mother about her great-grandmother, Aisha, and the bangle's original owner, but both dismiss her. Oh, there's somebody else, yes. Yusef says, young Sansa, Santa, lost her way during the partition of India, but was mysteriously able to find her father again with the Sea of Stars or whatever. After questioning Zimmer about her savior at AvengerCon, Cleary and Deaver order a sweep of the tri-state area targeting South Asian communities. A celebration, a young boy slips from a mosque balcony and almost falls before Kamala saves him with her powers. Kamala is chased by the DOC, the damage control agents, and led by Deaver, but is saved by Kamran, who introduces her to his mother, Najima, and the woman from Kamala's vision. Again, at this point, this show's fucking insane. Mm-hmm. So good.
It's fucking insane. So fantastic. And I mean, that's the thing, is like it dealing with a lot of the family stuff. Like, we keep saying we love the family stuff, but I feel like ironically, it's also the family stuff that we like least, because it's when it starts going real deep into the family stuff, it's where it just starts to feel like a different show. No, and I feel like it all adds up. Really?
I like all, it's literally the, what do they call, I want to call them Celestials. I'm sorry, I'm kind of fried right now.
Clandestines.
They're the ones that I don't like. It's when we get into their thing that I'm like, I don't know anything. Like, I love her family, and I love the backstory of it, like you know how they do the her going back in time to the train thing. That's a different conversation, but it's not the family. It's
well, more, that's what obviously I'm talking about. Yeah, it is. But it's her whole family plot of like that she helped her great grandma and all that stuff.
That's where the clandestine go that far back mixes with the family stuff, right?
Because it is her family, but she is a clandestine, the great grandma.
Semantics, potato, potato. Man.
Yeah, you know which clandestines I'm talking about when I don't like the clandestines.
Don't make me specify.
On camera. Yeah, you're, it's demeaning to both of us if you're thinking I'm including the great grandma in there. All right. All right. Number three, destined. Najma is, I'm not saying this right, right?
Najma,
is that right? Explains that she and Kamran are part of a group of five enhanced beings known as clandestines, who claim to be djinns. They were exiled from the Noor dimension, and that Aisha was also one of them. She also reveals that the bangle might be able to help them return and asks for Kamala's help. Kamala agrees, but Bruno warns her that interdimensional travel could be dangerous, so she asks Kamran for more time to ensure that she can do it safely. Kamran assents, but an impatient Najma decides to force Kamala to help them. Kamala's brother, Amir, marries his fiance, but Kamran crashes the wedding to warn Kamala before the other clandestines arrive. Kamala, Bruno, and Kamran are overpowered while Najma tries to use the bangle, which triggers a vision of the train. Department of damage control agents arrive, capture the clandestines, including Kamran. As Kamala and Bruno escape, Nakia sees Kamala use her powers. Santa contacts Kamala, revealing that she too also saw the vision of the train, insisting that they come and visit Karachi right now. Another great episode.
I wanted to just point out really quickly in the prior episode that a point that I forgot to bring up was when we eventually get to episode 5 and we get to the whole Trail of Stars thing, I want to echo what Tam mentioned in that episode of like, it just didn't hit as hard because we needed to be hit over the head more with this Trail of Stars. Like,
right.
Greg mentioned in episode 2 that they mentioned the Trail of Stars and that's how she was found. And like, I don't remember that moment at all until we need to be hit with it more. And I think that moment would have hit more and been more impactful when we get to episode 5. But that just kind of felt like a bit of a throwaway line that I needed some more backup for. So that when we get to episode 5, it kind of hits more and is kind of like, oh, shit, what a big reveal, you know?
I feel like the big reveal in that episode is that, like, Kamala doesn't make the stars, right? the little kid, because she's holding the bracelet still, creates the stars in that moment. Like, I thought that was the big moment of like, oh, it was. I think so. Because Kamala makes platforms and specifically is like, I only know how to make round stuff. And then.
But she says that, right? That Kamala says, I don't know about stars, but I can do circles.
Right. And then the platform gets broken because some dude like bumps into her. And then the little stars pop out. I got that was the
kid was making the stars?
Yeah. But I mean, I guess.
Grandma.
Maybe the grandma?
Kid grandma was making stars?
Kid grandma. Kid
grandma. I mean, I'm with Andy on this one.
Yeah, because they were a different color.
But then right?
From what I remember is there was the circle, it gets kind of bumped and it kind of is then the grandma's like doing something with her hands and it's a different color than Kamala's colors.
Tam nailed it.
I'm
in
looking
that moment.
Right now too, yeah.
Because Tam did bring up how like there seemed to be a disconnect between the Bengals' powers and how do we get these trail of stars from something
so
that
yeah,
we know
21,
gives out 40, crystals.
Two, she gets bumped, the circle breaks up, and then the girl does this. I thought she was just following them because it was supposed to follow her. Oh, here she's doing stuff. Well, I guess she's just going. I guess she's doing it, sure, whatever. I don't fucking know.
I think
it's stupid.
Create,
it's not presented well at all.
It's not well done. Yeah. And that's the thing. To Andy's point, like I think it kind of to dial it back. I think it's a bigger problem with the show in general, which is that again, I think they needed to go a little bit more intense with the family dynamic. I really love the family, and they're great from start to finish. But I wish. And this sounds silly, but I wish the older generation was like a little less supportive of her. I wish there was a little bit more friction there because we see a little friction between the grandmother, the mother, and then the mother and Kamala. But it's not so much that as a viewer, I think, hey, if the events of this series didn't occur, I would still think these characters are going to be totally fine and still love each other. And that's not necessarily something you want midway through a show. You want there to be a chasm between these family members, the main characters, right? The mother and the father and them being like, you know, the stuff with Avenger Con and stuff like that. Yeah, it was sad. But at the same time, at no point did I think, oh, man, this is going to be like irrevocable damage.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Sorry, I was just saying, I don't think that we always need to have family as a major drama point. I feel like a lot of times that's what it's used for. I actually really like that a lot of the times it was used for I wish it had you been used a little bit more as a support thing. Like, I feel like the two episodes in the middle where she's kind of hiding it, like, really hard from her family, like, there were multiple moments where I was like, oh, she's going to explain that, like, the reason she ruined the wedding is because she has these powers. It didn't go that way. And I was just kind of like, I feel like I wish that it had tried to create the family as less of an issue and more of a support. I guess what I'm saying.
I think at that point, that was one of my problems, right, is that by that point, I thought I knew them well enough to know how supportive they were, even though obviously they're trying to protect her. But like when you're trying to explain why you ruined your brother's wedding, I thought that would have been a great point to do it. And then if you remember those, I was like, she's going to hide it and that's okay, fine. To then have it revealed, and again, I think very lamely to her mom, again, with like as bad as that interaction was with the Celestials, so I'm going to keep calling them the clandestines, as bad as that interaction was, and then have her come and like, you're Nightlight? I was like, ugh. You know what I mean? And then get there today. Even in this episode, I didn't think it played well. I'm Nightlight. And they're all like, oh, you fucking knew. Like, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, even that, I kind of wish we got at least one of these moments of them actually, you know what I mean? But I get it.
The speakerphone line was worth it, though. I really liked that because I relate to that really well.
Yeah. But that's kind of my point, right? Is that when you think about like the payoffs for these things and like the feel good moments, you need to have, for however big the feel good moment is, you need to have a counterbalance to that. You need to have a moment of sadness and sorrow. And I don't feel like these characters ever really got there. They never really had so much conflict with each other where them accepting her as the superhero character felt validating to me. At no point did I ever think they're going to shun her at all. I don't think they're ever going to have an issue with her. And to Kevin's point, again, in my earlier point, you don't need all of them to be the boys. You don't need everything to be that dynamic as far as the series is concerned. But I felt like the emotions in this were always just sort of like steadily between a 50 and a 70. Never did they get to 100 and never did they get to 0. But I just wanted there to be a little bit more dynamic range with the conflict in this, because I feel like that would really would have helped the payoff at the end where the community comes out and says, no, this is our person. That moment kind of fell flat for me as well.
I think the part where we could have explored that more is something that we talked about in episode 5 with the mom and the grandma. That
when they get to karate.
They just got over that. Like, they got over the spat that wasn't even presented super well in the first place.
The spat that made the mother go to America, leave the country. They're like, yeah, we're cool. It's all right.
Yeah, it wasn't presented super well. And then they got over it really fast. And I just kind of wish that there was more there. I don't necessarily need. It does feel a little bit more or less believable. It does seem less believable that they are so worried about letting their daughter go to AvengerCon. And they're super strict there that her getting powers would not just drive them up the fucking wall and just be like,
terrify them.
This is what? Like, no, fuck. Yeah. That part is kind of unbelievable for me.
Sorry to interrupt. Especially after they saw her almost like try and save someone, but almost kill the kid. Right. That as a parent for me, I'd be like, you can't use these powers anymore. Mm. That's where I expected the dad to be. That's where I expected the mom to be. But like, we saw you. You failed. Like, this is not good. You're forbidden from using these powers. And it's not to say that I don't want to see them accept them. And listen, I love a supportive family. I think that's great. And I think that it's great that we
you
have
like support one day.
Nick no, but I mean, supportive families, everybody.
No, I mean, I think it's important to like to have that be an example for people and be like, oh, listen, like we're putting families out there in the media that's supportive. But it doesn't make for the most entertaining content, right? This is still a piece of dramatic art. And so we need a little bit more from these characters. Tim.
My problem is they gave us it, and I feel like then they dealt with four generations of this family, and they introduced conflicts between each of the generations, and then the conflict was always addressed immediately by them being like, oh, here's the answer, and then it's good. Episode 1 and 2, we have mom and dad, and like they are like, hey, you're not going to Avengers Con, and that totally just gets out the window the moment she gets powers, and they're like, well, dad, you taught me to always help people. And he's like, you're right, you gotta go help people. The dad from this episode to that episode don't add up. And then you get the mom, Kamala to her mom, to her grandma, to the great grandma, all the stories they tell about the great grandma. It feels like there's beef between some of the generations.
Yeah.
It only feels that way because they kind of say that. And then they have the whole talk about like, I don't have the pictures and all that stuff. And like they build up this story that kind of just moves the plot forward, but I feel like leaves the characters and specifically the generations of the family in a place that isn't as interesting as it should be, because they all start to feel like the same character at some point. They all feel like they don't have their unique thing. They're just all on the same side and they all support, which again, the support's good. And I think that it's more than anything, it's supporting the culture of it all. And it is supporting the culture of the family dynamics that these people have, but they were the ones that told us that there was beef between them, but that there was drama between them. And I think that is where there's a disconnect for me.
And I think a perfect example is like, I expected the ruining of the wedding to be a lot bigger of a deal than it ended up being. And the brother character is very, very cool the entire time, but, and maybe it's just me, but if like, and you know, my brother, but if I had ruined his wedding, I would still be hearing about that right to this day. I'm sure forgiveness would have come, but it would not have come that quickly. So that is well,
what if
it
you
is.
Had good cause, you know, you're trying to save everybody.
Have you met my brother? That? Do you think that wouldn't have, still wouldn't come up? You guys want some dessert? You guys remember that time Nick rolled away? He wants dessert.
I think Nick makes a great point though, that final sequence with the whole kind of town cheering them on would have been more impactful had the parents been against it the whole time. I do think that would have helped out more. It still worked out for me just because I'm a sucker for shit like that, and I got chills anyway. But also, it would have had more emotional resonance. Kamala.
Does everyone know that?
No, I don't think everyone knows.
The parents are screaming beta and hug at her. I'm like, no.
There's a lot of noise. There's a lot of cops yelling at them, damage control.
To Andy's point as well, I thought a moment that was unfortunately wasted was when, and it could have been a really comedic, very heartfelt, very impactful moment, but they're in the middle of making this plan and they turn around and the brother's just in the high school.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, mom told me to look out for you. And they're like, how did you get in here? And he's like, oh, I went to this high school, to a couple of throwaway lines. But I think that would have been a lot. Like, imagine if he had been like giving her the silent treatment for 2 episodes, if he had not been able to forgive her. And then realized, oh my God, my baby sister's in jeopardy, and I need to put all these feelings aside and go help her out and be there for her. And we never, we got him being there for her. We got him being there for consistently. And all, that's all I'm saying is, like, you need a little bit of a setup. You need a little bit of conflict going into that so that by the end, that character learns something and we learn something by virtue of that character learning something. And we feel that moment, which is really what those emotions are. It's not just somebody telling you, hey, feel happy right now. It's we've been through this journey with both these characters. We've seen their sorrow. We've seen them clash. And then by the time they come back, they remember, you know what's more powerful than anything? The love that we have for each other as family members. I'm always going to be here for you. You're always going to be here for me. And I think they told us that. But to Tim's point, I don't think they ever really, really, really got there showing us it.
And before we move on to the plot to the next episode, because I think this is the moment where so many of the plot threads that we are all enjoying just grind to a halt and are just completely put on pause until the finale. And then all of a sudden they're answered. Like Nakia running for the board is not ever really addressed again. We then see her kind of running shit at the end. And I feel like that is a disservice to the character, the things we like about the character in this world, especially when we see that she's not responding to the texts of Kamala. And that is handled in the finale with a conversation between them. It's like, it feels like a lot of the stakes that they built to, they were like, hold on, we got to do some flashback stuff. We got to travel and we got to like give you way more backstory. And I feel like had we not had that stuff, or if all of the flashback stuff was condensed into a like 5 to 10 minute segment of the show, but they still kept the rest of it going and we got two more full episodes of them in Jersey dealing with these characters and these scenarios, I think it would have been so much stronger without losing any of the cultural impact that we gained from the two episodes.
Or you know, or put them really not diametrically opposed, but really like have Nakia running for that council seat that she wanted, right? Running for that seat at the mosque, and then have Kamala have to make a choice between like saving someone and helping and being there for her, and then having her unfortunately save the person, right? We didn't get that dynamic between the two. The only real conflict was she's like, you didn't tell me you had superpowers. And it's like, all right, well, she's clearly going to get over that because they're best friends. Like these best friends are... That's really not a thing, right? And a lot of that, those smaller, minor conflicts between these characters were exactly that, where it's like, let's just put a little speed bump in front of these people. But let's be honest, like everyone that's watching this knows that they're good people, so they're going to forgive and forget.
Episode 4. Seeing Red, Kamala and her mom travel to Karachi to reunite with Grandma, who later reveals to Kamala that the bangle is trying to convey a message through the vision of the train. The next day, I hate Tim. I'm glad he's leaving. The next day, a masked Kamala goes to the train station to investigate, but is attacked by Kareem, a member of the Red Daggers vigilante group, who initially mistakes her for one of the clandestines.
Awful
Kareem
dialogue.
Takes Kamala to the Red Daggers hideout, where Kamala learns that the leader, Walid, and that the clandestines are trying to break the Veil of Nor, which separates the djinn dimension from the human world in order to expand and take over.
I like their technology. Clandestines.
I'm sorry, what's that?
I said I like their technology and like the
that thing they got on the wall and they're like really slow. If there was a fire in that place and you were trying to get out, that door takes way too long to get
way
through.
Oh yeah,
you would have died, but that's not what they're worried about.
Okay, sure, I do want to point out that I just really despised the dialogue that her and Red Bandana guy had. Like it was
when they're fighting.
It was just some all-time bad stuff. It just all-time bad stuff that kept on going. And it's like, stop this. This is not good what you're doing right here. The Super Mario reference, I forget what the fuck. It was just really bad stuff. Hated it.
I'd like to point out in a similar vein, Andy, how good you look in this shirt. Your shoulders look great. Your biceps look great. Very big
a
fan
lot
of
people
shirt.
Don't look good.
You can't see my belly, so that's all good.
I mean, welcome to all of us. You know what I mean? So that's the benefit of work from home like this. I was thinking about this. I'm like, I looked at the Peloton, haven't been on that as much as I want to be. And I'm like, oof, man, one day we're going back to this studio. I gotta look like I tried at some point.
Yeah. Same, dude. I'm gonna be like, do we have to like be on camera? Like,
I'm not gonna be in a postage stamp
the
forever.
Desks be up to my nipples. Or
The clandestines escape the Supermax prison, but Najma abandons Kamran for his betrayal. Kamala begins training with the Red Daggers to master her powers, but they are interrupted by the clandestines. A chase ensues during which Walid kills one of the clandestines, one of them, because God knows these people have no fucking names. Najma kills him in turn. As Kamala and Kareem fend off the clandestines, Kareem kills one of them, and Najma accidentally stabs the bangle, sending Kamala back in time to the partition.
Boo.
And this is where you just read that. How much of that? That's a lot of shit, dude, happened in one episode. Jeezy, crazy. You know what I mean? And like, I think this is where we're just packing in way too much. I remember this is when we're doing these reviews, and it's like mainly episode 5. We're like, man. Or in this one, it's like, there's a lot of threads coming together really quickly, and not being fleshed out that much. Again, where it's like, if I had my way with the show, right? Like, the Red Daggers are introduced so quickly and so surface level in the very similar thing here of the way the clandestines are. I'd be like, can we just not do them or this? Like, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I just don't think the clandestines are adding that. I don't know. They're just not fun. They're not fun. Yeah. The storyline's not fun. Not I would rather hang out with grandma and learn more about the partition.
Me too.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was the first episode of one of the Disney Plus shows that it ended. And I was like, what the fuck is happening? And any of the options I think are happening, I am not excited for the next one. And then we get the next episode and then it ends in a similar way with Circle Q exploding. And I'm like, that's one of the more bizarre out of nowhere ends ever. It just felt like a button that wasn't the intended ending to the episode because they felt like they needed something more. And it was just weird to have those two back to back and just be kind of like bummed out about it. But then bringing it back for the finale, I did enjoy it a lot. But continuing on, Greg, episode 5.
Time and again in India, 1942, Aisha takes refuge in a village where Hassan, an Indian independent activist, offers her food and shelter. They fall just in love most, and have a child. Hold on.
I mean, just not, no, you can't just brush over them. Like, this is the most attractive couple I've ever seen. Oh, yeah. In
this whole thing's hot. And not hot heat. Like they're nude, hot like they're. Look at the power, the passion these people have.
Yeah, he's saying poetry, and she's just forgetting why she's even there. Let's hang on.
5 years later, Najma finds Aisha and orders her to retrieve the bangle. Sorry, what's that, Kev?
I was just going to say really quick, the interaction was cool, was hot, but one thing that I didn't notice the first time watching it, rewatched it yesterday to watch the finale with Avery and Paula, and Avery was like, neither of these people, like the three first things they say to each other, they're just not listening to the responses. Like, they start talking, and the other interrupts, clearly not listening to the response, and starts saying something else. Like, he starts reading off some poem, and she just says something in front, like talks over. It's just funny the way that, like, their first interaction is cute, but it's like, it's clearly all lust.
Let's not criticize people who don't listen to other people and talk over each other. Let's not throw stones at the old glass house here, okay?
I was just saying it was like an interesting choice for like to direct that shot, like that scene that way.
A very understated one came earlier in this very episode where I like finished talking about episode one and then we started talking about like going forward episode, and Nick's like, I don't know when she goes to Avenger Con. I'm like, well, I just fucking read that, but no big deal. Don't worry about it. I understand these are dense episodes. I understand.
Hey,
Aisha leaves we're back to the bangle. Chat's saying I've been saying bangle like a tiger. if you skip this show, they are not running around with a tiger. They are running around with a bangle. My apologies, everybody.
That, I thought it was bangle, too. I don't know.
Bangle. It's the bangle?
Bangle.
Bangle. Bang. Bang. Bangle. Bangle.
What's wrong with you?
Well, I'm saying bangle now, and it does not sound right. Does that sound right to you, Tim?
You were nailing it, and then you started saying slow and weird.
Bangle.
Yeah. Was I saying it right before this time or this time? Have I said bangle like a tiger at all this episode?
No, I don't think so.
Chat, what are you doing to me? This is what I hate. Oh, don't even bring up Sepulveda. Don't even bring up Sepulveda. We're not even getting started on that one.
Sepulveda.
Don't even. Aisha leaves the bracelet and grandma with Aunt grandma and attempts to flee to the new nation of Pakistan with her family. But Najma finds and stabs her. Hassan and grandma are separated in the chaos. Kamal is able to interact with Aisha, who asks her to guide grandma before dying, conjuring a projection of stars to lead grandma to her father. Kamala realizes she was the one who reunites them. So again, they're saying Kamala did this. Returning to the present, she finds that Najma's strike had opened the Veil of Noor, but it vaporizes anyone who interacts with it. Najma transfers her power to Kamran, sacrificing herself to close the veil. Yeah, Gavin.
This is another one of those things where I don't understand what's going on. The woman is like, oh, I'm going to jump into the veil, and then like disintegrates. And then Najma is like, I know what I must do. And then
I do love Kamran, the guy I left behind.
Does the same thing the other woman did. And like somehow that gives him powers. Is he a mutant? I don't know.
No, I think
that was Scarpino.
I think she knew that she had like maybe more power to stop the thing from existing.
I'm just saying, this is a moment where they made it very unclear, and it just looks silly.
Gotcha.
Okay. I mean, it's some of the dumbest looking VFX of a death like I have ever seen. Like, it
I like
looks
how they
like
try to put it in
Mortal Kombat
and they
fatality.
Like, cut away as fast as they can.
Yeah.
She transfers her powers. Okay, cool. We saw that. That's why that happens. Got it. Grandma and mom find Kamala, and the latter accepts her daughter's powers. Meanwhile, Kamran seeks refuge with Bruno. After being attacked by a drone, Kamran destroys it, but the ensuing explosion obliterates the Circle Q. And this is where you're like, oh, God. No.
Yeah, we got
And
more.
Again, this isn't the worst thing. I've watched way worse television. It's just like, this show's so good, and it's like, oh, man, this is what we're going to do with it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if anything, it lowered my expectations so much that I ended up enjoying the finale. Because when we finish episode 5, I'm like, this felt like the finale. What the hell is going to happen now? It's just going to be the same bullshit hero fighting or whatever. And I think they introduced some elements in the finale that I ended up enjoying. And I kind of liked the power set, honestly. But I think that I think I'm definitely in the minority on that one. I liked watching Kamran actually fight people in the finale and launch the car to the lady. And then, like, I don't know. I thought it looked cool. And I'm kind of a fan of power sets like that.
Andy, how did you feel about her proportions when she and Biggins?
It's cool. She looked like Ripley in the mech.
Okay. In the suit. Right. Yeah.
Kevin, right. How did you feel about the use of Biggins?
I was very excited. Yeah. And, like, I wish that, like, somewhere we had an episode of The Simpsons going on. That episode, you know, so that we got a hint of like, oh, she got it from The Simpsons.
But that was she, my one she just thing. Went... Like, I popped for it on the couch, and Jen's like, what? I'm like, she said the thing. I'm like doing the Leonardo DiCaprio thing. Mm-hmm. But then it was just like a thing of like, oh, right. Like, this doesn't mean anything to you. Like, they didn't set up at all throughout.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, ask, oh. did I miss the part where she was practicing with Bruno and he was like, you got to say embiggen to get big? I didn't like, they just did. Said the word. Did that get set up somewhere?
No, I'm saying they missed that part.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I totally am in alignment with you guys.
Because she said like, embiggen, and I'm like, that's not a term. That's not like a normal term, right? Like, that's not something that people go around saying.
It's her catchphrase.
It's her catchphrase.
But did she had was she no, like, she, oh, man.
No. We're all on the point with you, Nick. That, like, yeah, they try to make it a thing, and they rely on us as comic people to be like, yes.
Right.
And then like, that worked.
It'll be great when she says it in fucking Marvels. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Will it? I still think it'll be weird. You know, like, I think like, that she's going to say in like Marvels.
I wish she'll get like a real true one of like, yeah, Biggin. We'll be like, yeah. And they'll be like, Marvel's in theater this Wednesday. Oh, y'all got jokes? Oh, no. They got Bebop and Rocksteady, too.
What? It's classic. It's a classic joke.
That's a classic like, kind of funny. Andy, go back to kind of funny university and do your history.
What are you doing this Saturday?
Right?
Y'all got jokes?
Dynamite, Andy.
Kevin, you're my favorite audience member. You know what I mean? I'm just playing to Kevin from now on. Everybody else get bent.
I'm all in.
Nick, what was the point you're trying to make? You got run over like 4 times there.
I was just saying they should have set it up, right? If that was going to be our catchphrase, if that was going to be a thing, we needed to hear it a few other times. Like when she's like, oh my God, we're at Avengers Con and Biggin. How embiggen is that? Or
just,
whatever.
Just to be, I think you got cut off, Nick, because we're all in agreement. Like,
Yes. But I'm less saying it for you guys and more saying it for the other people that are listening to this podcast, which is.
But also, was that not the same point that me and Greg were just talking about?
I was trying to provide an example for it before everyone was talking over so people could understand the point that we were trying to make so it would back it up. But it's okay. Then I was also going to make a booyah joke for Andy, but you guys totally fucked that up for everyone. So let's just barrel through this final episode, okay? That's really where I was going, guys.
He's doing the show for me. Greg's doing it for Kevin. Nick's doing the show for me.
Fucking booyah.
The way you're acting right now is the biggest one I've ever seen.
Stop.
Here it is.
Guys, stop. Oh, man.
You have the t-shirt?
He has the shirt.
Wait,
hey, Kev, why are you saying stop?
The record has stopped. Give me 2 seconds. Yeah. I mean, we can keep going, and I can grab the YouTube one. Like, let's just make that decision.
You better, man. I just revealed the Fat 5 t-shirt.
Yeah,
you know what
fucking
I mean?
Better.
Okay,
are you kidding me right now? You fucking, I went through all that, got really hot, look and like remembered it's I was wearing this shirt, and I had to show it something.
It looks a little like...
I paid company money for the shirt, forgot my head.
Good.
one for me too. Spoilers. It kind of looks like it says fats, and I'm kind of in for it.
Well, remember that was this is what I designed, and I said, "Hey, Joey, make this into a kind of funny shirt." And she said, "No." And so that's why you can now get it from my bonfire.gameovergreggy.com /20% off Fat Five. There you go.
Perfect.
It's not 20% off. It's just the URL. I apologize. All right. Episode 6. No normal. While Bruno and Kamran are on the run, Deaver orders a citywide lockdown to find the ladder. Kamala crafts a disguise using a gift from her mother, which is awesome. Like I, when she came in and gave her this super suit, I got teared. I got choked up. I
thought because it came from. Did it come from her grandmother?
No, she got it made in Pakistan.
Okay, because I thought
her mom makes it,
but it came from Karachi, it came from Pakistan.
Yeah, and it was in the toffee box. I thought that her mom referenced and talked about stuff like that.
Yeah, that was good.
Using the logo that she saw on the broken necklace.
Yeah,
I really like that too. I know it's dumb. I know it's her picking it up, and be like, "What is this?" And then it's like, "Oh, it's her necklace that we've seen the whole time." But it's like it's also the symbol. I like
but it. It's also, I think, just I wasn't expecting, nor did I see any leaks of how the costume would look.
It's the cover art.
Aside from like the one from behind when she's. Wait, what?
Isn't it the cover art?
It's the Disney Plus like
logo.
Like when no, you but go I think Disney... just seeing it in action, it looks a lot cooler than I expected it to look. I guess maybe my expectations are just lower just because it's a Disney Plus show and I don't really know how that fabric and material would work in the real world and how can they kind of transport it to real life and make it look as good, but I thought it looked fucking awesome. And
it looked great. I liked it. I liked it so much.
The mask looked really cool as well. I don't know. That's a Fat Five for me, you know.
Fat Five right there. She kept taking off the mask. I kept getting mad at her. Real quick, just to shut something down in the chat, Scott Bechtel from the Bechtel test says her mom just somehow knew all her measurements. That's a mom and dad thing. I could tell you mean to me make a costume for Benjamin right now. Greg, I can make it no problem.
Tell me what my measurements are right now.
I'm not your dad.
You're a dad.
It's true. He got you, Greg.
You're back on the Fat Five train. You can have a shirt, Nick, all right?
I want it. I'm wearing it right now underneath mine.
With help from our friends, the group stalled the Department of Damage Control agent. Cleary orders a retreat, but Deaver ignores him. Cleary, everybody. It's Snooey, my bad. Leads a detachment of agents in storming the school where Kamala and her friends are hiding and arrests everyone except Kamala and Kamran, who confronts Deaver. She attacks him, but Kamala fights off the agents, allowing all of her friends to escape. Deaver flees and is later relieved of her duty by Cleary. Kamala becomes a beloved figure in her community and takes the superhero name Miss Marvel from her father, while Kamran flees to Pakistan and meets with Kareem as arranged by Kamala. Yes, Kevin Quella.
I watched this like a day later than I didn't watch it at midnight, and I got a text from Tim being like, "Yo, man, did you see the end? Crazy, huh?" And I was like, "No, I haven't seen it. Don't tell me any more stuff." And he's like, "Well, hit me up when you get there." And I'm like, "All right." So the whole time I'm like, "What is gonna happen?" And I legitimately thought one of these kids was gonna get shot by a cop. Like the it starts out with that warning. It starts out with a warning of like, "Hey man, shit's gonna get real."
Some fucked up stuff.
And I was like, "Oh shit, this is gonna be serious." I'm really happy that didn't happen though. I want to make that clear.
I thought I thought the payoff with the dad where he was telling her what her name meant, I thought that was very, very endearing. I thought that worked a little bit more for me than the leap that was the mom seeing the broken necklace and being like, "Let's turn this into your superhero logo."
Always so hard to make a superhero suit, you know what I mean?
It breaks my brain. I'm
as
like,
a parent, like, you know what I mean? Like when you fucking Smallville season 10, you know, Martha Kent representing the great state of Kansas.
Who could forget?
That's how you know it's fiction. Representing Kansas in Congress or whatever, right? She somehow makes this perfectly like plastic Brandon Routh embossed symbol suit for no way. Get out of here.
Yeah. It's not gonna happen. Like, but I did like when he said you're our little Miss Marvel. You're a Miss Marvel.
That was good.
That was very, very cute. I was like, makes a lot of sense why she would call herself that or why that would be the character's name. That's really nice.
And that's the thing is there's so many moments like that throughout this show that make me lean towards the word love as opposed to like, even though there's so much that I have to not even nitpick. Like, I think there are like valid criticisms of this show overall, but like a lot of the moments that needed to hit really hit.
Hit real hard.
And back to it. Sorry, I was in the middle of Googling how to say mangle. Bruno Laurentos, Kamala, possesses mutant genes, and the rest of her family lacks. In a mid-credit scene, the bangle bangle emits a glow that teleports Kamala out of her bedroom.
Bingle bangle bongo.
Danvers suddenly appears in her place. Oh my god. What a great mid-credit scene. Like, and that was the thing of like the mutated thing happened, and I was like, and then Jen was like, what? And I was like, I'm going to play it back. She's like, no, mutation. I got it. But I'm like, listen, listen. And they had the X-Men stinger in there. I was like, fuck yeah, that's amazing.
I mean, you guys know me. I like lost my shit. And I watched it about 10 times before I moved on. Because I was like, I can't believe they just did it. Because I was expecting him to be like say, inhuman. And
yep, when they that's what I said. Under my breath, I said inhumans, yeah.
It is just such an exciting development for the MCU. I love it. I love this choice. And I just love that this is now the second time in 2 months that we've heard the fucking 90s X-Men theme. Mm-hmm. Like, it is just incredible shit that they're going with this. I love that they're building her as a mutant. And on top of that, next week we have X-Men 97 being revealed at Comic-Con. Like, super cool. What a fucking time to be alive.
You know what I needed, though? What I needed from her when she's... because she's kind of just, like, jogging places with the platforms. Mm-hmm. It's cool. Like, yeah. She's running at the same speed on the ground, but just high, high up. Mm-hmm. I needed, like, a couple of, not the full move set and in the traversal kit, you know, but, like, a couple of Spider-Man stretchy arm grabs to the building and, I needed a couple of those because, for the most part, it's just her doing Stairmaster in the sky. It's like, she's slow as shit.
I agree. And then I saw people commenting on that of, like, damn, she can be winded wherever she's going. So tired. Slow as hell. And I was like, yeah, I guess it is a weird way to traverse New York.
Well, I think it's extra funny when, in addition to what Andy's saying, of like the last shot should have been her, like, oh, the fucking mutant. Ah, then we get like the crazy Spider-Man swing scene. But instead, we see her Stairmaster up. It pauses for a second, and then way in the distance, you just see little purple circles in the sky. And it's like, okay, that's how we're showing that. That's there you go. There's the budget. And then, post-credit scene. Freaking so cool. Like, again, this is one of those things we've done now, 8 MCU shows, and every single time there's, like, the thing that it seems like they're building towards that would be a great cameo, whatever. Captain Marvel was the obvious one here. I love that they didn't do what I expected them. I thought it was either going to be she comes in and saves the day, which there was a moment in the finale that she totally could have swooped in and saved it. Happy she didn't do that. And I'm also happy that she didn't just come in and be like, hey, I heard about you. Good job, kid. And then, like, fly out. Like, this is a great tease at getting into the Marvels. There's things to theorize about, and I think that they did a great job with the use of the blink and you miss it 10 rings iconography in one of the past episodes, tying the bangles to that stuff, and the post-credit scene of Shang-Chi. I'm like, fuck yeah, man. This is why I like the MCU.
I wish she kind of, in the similar way when we see Ian McKellen as Magneto, like, using like kind of flying with the, like, he'll be standing on like that silver sort of platter or whatever, that metal platter. So cool. It, just like that, Greg, just like that. But like, we see scenes of her, like,
iron in your
blood. See scenes of her pushing platforms. So like, what's holding her back from using a platform to like launch her up? I don't know. There's like a lot of cool things they can do with it.
She still isn't trained, man.
She's still,
That's one thing I'm excited about, is that wherever she teleported to, where Ms. Marvel was, maybe this kind of begins the next phase of her kind of realizing what her powers are. Because she's a mutant, but, like, can she withstand a punch than, you know, more than a normal human? Like, that's sort of the stuff that I'm kind of still wondering.
Is she the Wolverine?
She'll have to wait and find out. Now it's time for something I like to call Haiku in Review.
7 syllables in the middle. You need 5 for the first and last line. If it's not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in Review. Haiku in Review.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny just like Eric Myers did, who says, great show. Then I hear, na-na-na-na-na-na. Now, it's excellent.
Excellent. That's good. That's good.
Grant Burton says, a colorful show. The bangle makes her limbs grow. Bangle. So good. I go, whoa.
Whoa.
Bangle.
So there's a bangle and there's a bengal.
Yeah, bangle's a tiger. Yeah.
Bangle's the mascot of their high school. Bangle's the thing that she wears.
But I'm saying, Sam, here's what I want. Everybody shut up. Everybody shut up except Tim in a second, all right? Tim, randomly move it like a cup game and then say one and I'll identify which one it is.
Okay. 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 Ready? 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 Bengal.
That's the title.
Yeah.
Now say the other one.
All right. Yeah. 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 Bengal.
I mean, tiger. You said it was the other
one. I said the tiger again. I did the tiger. Okay. I was trying to catch you. Trying to catch you there. All right. All right. All right. Bengal.
This is as mind-bending as that one time where somebody's like, carpenters do more than put down carpet. And I don't know what to believe anymore. I don't know where, before this, we went for an hour and like a 15, before an hour and 15 minutes ago, I had it down. I've lost my boring reality. I am out here living and I'm lost. Is it a fat five or what? I don't know. I'm off the grid.
Kevin, what he's bringing up is the time that he thought carpenters only did or worked on carpet.
Kevin was the one that corrected him, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Kevin was like, no, a carpenter like builds things. They don't install carpets. And
Greg just
like,
thinks we're gaslighting him.
All right, let's do Ragu Bagu.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys, the podcast within a podcast where we rank all the villains of the MCU universe. Of course, you know, we have recently moved it to tiered systems because, of course, there are 47 bad guys on the list right now. So you have S, A, B, C, D, or F. Where do we think?
Where are the flag smashers?
Wait, hold on. Tim's got something to say.
I want to interrupt real quick, Greg. Real quick. For the last couple months, anytime I pop on Reddit, I see Zombie High, a couple numbers there, talking his shit, saying that we need that where there's injustices and we need to rank the bad guys that they're we right. haven't done the full Ragu Bagu, and there's a whole bunch of things we're missing. We have them all ranked. I'm looking at the list, and all the ones that you say are not ranked are on this list.
You've been crying out for Hawkeye. Is Hawkeye on there?
Dumb. Hawkeye is at number 21.
You're dumb.
Number Echo, 21 is, of Kingpin. Course, Echo plus TSM slash Kingpin slash the mom from The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It.
That
there you go.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And number 22 is Icarus and the Deviants in Eternals. Perhaps it was the episode where we did the whole like checking in and doing the one shots. I don't know, but at some point we did it. Everyone's here. Everyone's here.
So it's Scott Bechtel again in the chat.
Scott Bechtel, I see you in the chat. I'll see you in the chat.
Now you're gonna see us in the street, Scott Bechtel. We're gonna have a bangle or a bangle, and you're not gonna know which is coming your way, brother. I'm gonna have a giant fucking cage, and I'm gonna say it's a bangle. You won't know what's coming out.
Want to start this one off? This is a full list. This is a comprehensive Ragu Bagu list, Greg. Sorry, you were saying that this is tiered from S down to F.
And you want me to go through them all? With pleasure.
No.
Number one.
No. I was just saying the explanation to people. Who wants to start this off? Where are we going to put the clandestines and Department of Damage Control?
I'd like to know where the flag smashers are on the list.
The flag smashers currently are at the bottom of the D tier. They are at number 36, flag smasher / John Walker, Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
I'll start the bidding right below that.
Do you want to stay in the D tier or do you want to move to the F, which is led right now at number 37 by Magneto and the Phoenix in X3?
That's a dark place.
Yeah.
But think about Ian McKellen. Like, he's still bringing it as Ian McKellen.
That wasn't Ian McKellen, right? Oh, okay.
Wasn't it Fassbender?
No, this is X3. This is X3.
Yeah, you're right. X3. Sorry. I'm sorry. He said it wasn't. He got in my head.
Remember, he moves the chess piece at the end, and we were all like, whoa.
Okay, I'm going to say it's the bottom of D. I think Nick's right for the placement, but my argument for the D, and I know there's going to be some.
Give me your argument for the D. This.
I made it earlier, but like Andy doesn't agree with me, but I think that the Department of Damage Control should have been way more fleshed out and wasn't as good as it should have been. But I do think that they did more with it and it was impactful for me. And I liked them not nearly as much as John Walker, but a lot more than Phoenix in X-Men 3. And I don't think it's F tier. I do think the clandestines are F tier. I think that the way they were handled, everything about them was bad. Yeah. But I think that overall, I say it's the bottom of D.
I wouldn't fight that. I agree with that.
I can get behind that. 100%. Yeah, that's actually what my argument was going to be.
Look at it, number 47, Jessica Chastain and Zelda mummies.
I have no reference for what that is. Time. Remember when you came out of the Temple of Time as an adult and then there was all the mummies in Hyrule?
Oh, the re-deads.
The re-deads.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I don't even remember that at all.
They were aliens.
Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Remember that one time where you screwed me over with like the hardest questions ever in a quiz show? And you're like, well, I was going to do what's Link's horse. And I was so fucking mad. Like, that's harder. I'm like, that's not harder.
Any given Sunday.
Any given Sunday. All right, y'all. It's time to.
Hold on. I got it. So before we get out of here, we always rank the tier. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. At the bottom of D tier at 37 is the Clandestines and the Department of Damage Control from Ms. Marvel. Above them at 36, Flag Smashers John Walker from the Winter Soldier, or, you know, Falcon the Winter Soldier. Above that at 35, Thor's Loki. Above that at 34, Franco Malloy and Taskmaster and Black Widow. At 33, Obadiah Stane in Iron Man. Then Mandarin and Aldrich Killian in Iron Man 3 for 32. And then 31 is the Vision from Solo and Solo.
Fucking goddamn, it always has to go back to the Vision from Solo. All right, now it's time to rank the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Kevin, can you please bring up the list as it stands?
What is he laughing at?
I don't know why he's laughing.
In the chat, in the live chat, Nick Stainforth says, Wrangle Bangle.
I love that. This fucking show, man. Number one currently is Endgame, 2 Infinity War, 3 No Way Home, 4 Homecoming, 5 Civil War, 6 Ragnarok, 7 Winter Soldier, 8 Guardians 2, 9 Loki, 10 WandaVision, 11 Avengers, 12 Guardians 1, 13 Shang-Chi, 14 Iron Man, 15 Far From Home, 16 Black Panther, 17 Doctor Strange, 18 Multiverse of Madness, 19 Hawkeye, 20 Falcon and Winter Soldier, 21 Captain Marvel, 22 Ant-Man and the Wasp, 23 Ant-Man, 24 Black Widow, 25 Iron Man 2, 26 Age of Ultron, 27 First Avenger, 28 Iron Man 3, 29 Eternals, 30 What If, 31 Moon Knight, 32 Hulk, 33 Thor, and 34 Thor, The Dark World.
Hmm. Wait, I'm confused.
Does seem like where's Love and Thunder is missing here.
Okay.
Oh, no. You know what? Was 14, I got the image, but I didn't put it in. So
you wrangle bangled this one, Kevin.
Wrangle bangled.
If you're looking at this right now, number 14 is Love and Thunder. So below Shang-Chi. Look at that.
Boom. Done. What do you mean? It's Tim. It was there.
Everybody, if you're looking at it right now, your eyes work now. Before, you've been wrangle bangled.
You've been wrangle bangled. Who wants to start the bidding on Miss Marvel?
I hate this. I'm in that ugly spot.
Yeah, this
spot.
Is tough. This is
I'm
tough.
In the ugly spot. You all, I mean, just this.
Can I? May I? May I?
Oh, here
may
we go. It's always our fault.
Go ahead. You may, Kevin.
Here's the thing.
Here's it.
This is a really tricky one. I liked it a lot. Obviously, it has issues. It's not perfect. I think I would put it under Hawkeye, and that means no disrespect. You know? 21.
Good.
No disrespect.
No disrespect.
That was a lot of fun. I think honestly, I'm the hottest on this show out of everyone. You guys are all
picky. I don't think that's true.
Annoying.
I don't think that's true at all because I
think you are the hottest person on this show.
Would put it at number 20. I think it's better than Hawkeye. I think that Hawkeye.
You're insane, you fucking idiot.
I just admit you
hate Jeremy Renner.
No, I love him and I love Hawkeye. I'm a Hawkeye enthusiast for sure. I think that the finale of Hawkeye was really bad and like destroyed so much of the goodwill that the show had going for it. And I don't like where the show left off. Miss Marvel's the opposite. I love where it left off. I think episodes 1, 2, and 6 are really, really, really damn good. I think 3 was pretty okay. 4 and 5 I could have done without for sure. So because of all that, I would put it at number 20.
I know that we haven't watched Ant-Man 1 in forever, but that's got to be way higher. Because like I'm in that spot where I think this show is a lot more entertaining than Hawkeye. I was not really a fan of Hawkeye at all. But I don't think it's like better than Ant-Man. I'm in that ugly spot, Greg. I'm in that ugly spot.
I know. I don't like when you.
And I agree with you there too, Andy. I think Ant-Man's better than any of these.
Oh, yeah. I'll play with what's dealt. Everybody's going to agree with that. And then it's going to be like, well, how to get here? And then you know what happens? We have to revote on everything.
I know.
What you want? You want to revote?
I say we start with the Ragu Bagu list.
I'm going to put this over. Man, this is tough, dude. I'm gonna put this over Black Widow at 25.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I'm kind of right there with Andy. I would rank this a lot lower than I think you guys are. I think that it had really good moments, but overall I think it just kind of fell flat for me. And I don't think the last episode did it any favors with the final fight. So I would probably put it right below Ant-Man as well.
Like if I could clone myself, I'd put it below Ant-Man, but then I'd also put it above Hawkeye. So keep that. So do the math there.
I hate this kid.
All right, Greg. It all comes down to you.
Well, I'd like to point out, of course, that earlier Andy was like, I like the show and you didn't. Like, I just want to point out that I'm going to rank it higher than him. And so just a heads up, everybody, that you can't trust the Nitro Rifle anymore.
All right. You loved Hawkeye.
He's wrangle bangled. Did I say I did? Yeah, you just wanted to put it. Where'd you put it? You put it in Ant-Man, I thought. You had a real confusing thing about cloning yourself. What was your first thing you said? Was I supposed to listen to the entire
thing? I was pretty clear
what
about
that. Where did you fucking vote?
I also did not understand the cloning thing, Andy, yeah. If we're being honest.
I didn't understand.
I just heard Andy,
I understood the cloning thing, but maybe you should explain it to them so that they get just it.
Because
so you know?
We're dumber than
Kevin. Yeah, like I was splitting the vote amongst the two clones.
So what did you vote for? You wanted to
I voted it the first spot.
I voted it underneath Ant-Man, but then I also voted it above Hawkeye.
How that's confusing to me.
The second vote's the clone vote, so it doesn't count. I mean, it's really Thank you, guys.
The clone's just there for the organ farming. Okay.
That's right.
I think this is below Hawkeye. But the question I get hung up on is how much did I enjoy Falcon and Bucky? And I enjoyed their character moments a lot. We enjoyed that for a long time. It falls apart at the end too. And then obviously the Flag Smashers. But here we are just talking about again two villain groups that you're like whatever about.
Remember when John Walker murdered a man in front of public? That it was like really the coolest remember thing. When, and then he remember, was Buddy at the end. It sucked. God damn,
dude. But this,
I mean, the super serum brings out what's like, in you, whether it's good or bad or middle of the road, you know. I'm going to go below Hawkeye. I'm going to put it at 21.
Perfect. That's exactly where it should be.
That means it's number 21.
You're welcome.
Ms. Marvel is below Hawkeye and above Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
What about the clone, though?
The clone.
No, his clones don't count. Legislation changed, clones don't count.
I feel like how we get
circumcising the list. Circumcising Wrangle Bangle.
Infinite Andes, where Andy clones himself, but then that clone clones himself, and then that, and then and they all keep voting the exact same way, but they keep wishing the other person would vote a different way.
Man, I'd have such a good rock band if I could do that.
The Andes.
You think so?
And your logo could be the mountain range.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
That got good, wow. Dick. That got good.
Yeah.
We're not going to get better than that. Brutal, so we're going to end the episode Remember, next week, Rocky, it's starting. I'm going to punch a lot.
There it is.
Have a marvelous day.
Love and Thunder should have gone and went higher. You guys are crazy. I hate you both.